There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Third and final hour of the show. We're live here from Barasti. Our final show of from Barasti, the grill show that is, for the summer, hopefully back after the summer months. New home for Barasti during the Cricket World Cup and the remainder of the summer. More details to follow on Dubai I-103.8. We're going to go around the grounds for you and keep you up to date with all the live sport in just a few moments' time. But there's only one place that really... talking of one place, if you're looking for somewhere to come and watch the Champions League final, then get yourself down here to Barasti. You'll be able to watch the crickets live down here at the moment. Then you've got the Gallagher Premiership from 6 o'clock this evening. And then, of course, into the biggie, Liverpool against Spurs from 11 o'clock this evening. It's being shown live downstairs on the beach. That'll be outdoors. If you want to do it less sweaty, then it's being shown inside in the new air-conditioned tent and arena, which has been set up for the summer months down here at Barasti. It's the Champions League final.
We've been part of two memorable, historic nights, two of the greatest semi-finals you'll ever see. And two English teams. I mean, to have two English teams, seeing that on the screen there. Two teams who were, no one gave a chance coming into the second leg. No. Both down.
And the manager deserves great credit. The players deserve great credit.
It's just that I've got goosebumps, and yeah. I don't have an affinity with Liverpool, but it's why we love the game. Tonight is why everyone loves football. It's the best thing in the world. Forget sport, it's the best thing in the world.
It's obviously one of the most difficult things in the world of football. And I said to the boys before the game, I don't think it's possible, but because it's you, I think we have a chance.
My player, they are heroes. I told you in the last year, I am telling everyone that they have a group of players that for me are heroes, and they show today. Thank you. Thank you, football.
That opens up for Salah. Firmino coming in, and somehow it's able to find its way through to the Brazilian. Eriksen's on his way. Eriksen's onside. Eriksen, 3-0. And in dreamland, Tottenham now, the European champion.
Robbie, Rob, Monty and Dan with me, Tom Urquhart here, live on the grill. And their thoughts ahead of the 2019 Champions. Stato, when was the last time we... that's just a general Stato, not pointing in anyone's direction. When was the last time two English teams met in the Champions League final, Robbie?
It would be 2008, Chelsea-Manchester United. And if you're looking for signposts, if you're looking for clues, that one did go to penalties. John Terry's famous slip producing the victory for Manchester United in that one. But I think, a similar kind of game, powerhouse game, I think we're expecting. High intensity, maybe not the most expansive game of football. I think that they'll be competing for every single ball, every single 50-50. We're going to see a lot of challenges. We're going to see a lot of tackles flying in. It's going to be played at a breakneck pace. And I wouldn't be surprised, shocked, if we get the same result, 1-1, at the end of the night. I know I've predicted 2-0 to Liverpool, but I'm covering my bases.
So, let's talk team selection if we can. Let's try and put ourselves in the shoes of the respective managers, because as memorable as those semi-finals were, Rob, they're causing a few headaches, aren't they? Especially given what it's been 4 or 5 weeks since those semi-finals, and the managers have obviously probably got full teams and full fitness with regards to their squads back to a certain degree. Which way do you see things going?
Well, I think the 3-4 week break will certainly have helped Spurs. Undoubtedly, they were almost running on empty towards the end of the season. The players were depleted. They were clearly lacking that drive and that inspirational play that they had during the season. So certainly a break would have done them good. I mean, there are, you look at the Liverpool side and you could probably pick the team, other than maybe there's a midfield decision to be made there between three of the four players. For the Spurs, I think it's slightly more difficult. You've obviously got the Harry Kane conundrum, which I'm sure we'll touch on before, but even more so with Spurs, I think they've got a tactical decision to be made about their formation. They've played Liverpool twice this year. They've used a couple of different formations, which have worked to a greater or lesser extent, whether they've played the three at the back or five, if you want to call it, or whether they've played four at the back. So that's where I think Pochettino's got the big decision to make, how he sets up his team to firstly, I suppose, hold Liverpool back, and then secondly, how to be able to build themselves into the game and ensure that they remain in the game, because Liverpool have got that ability to wipe them away, wipe teams away, as they've seen.
Interesting. I think you're actually spot on, really. That's the big question mark for me, is what formation do Spurs go with? Because just like, if we go back to the game at Anfield, I mean, the game at Wembley earlier on this season, I think Liverpool played Spurs at a good time. I think we hit the ground running in the Premier League season. They took a little bit of time. Obviously, they were still had question marks over their stadium. Obviously, they were still playing at Wembley, and we played them off the park that day. It ended 2-1, but that was fortunate for Spurs, really. It really should have been more. And looking at the Anfield game, though, they initially started off with three at the back, but in reality it was five at the back, because Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, who, you know, Robbie spoke about before, the full-backs for Liverpool, they pushed really high on and kind of penned Tottenham in. At half-time, he changed things around. He moved Vertonghen from the kind of third centre-back to left-back. He pushed Danny Rose further up onto left wing, went for that back four, and it kind of changed the game around. It kind of penned Liverpool's full-backs in and allowed Spurs to gain control. And that 45 minutes of football in that second half from Tottenham Hotspur was the best 45 minutes of football played by any opposing side at Anfield this season. Better than what Manchester City played, better than anything that Barcelona played in the semi-final. It was a really impressive performance from them, and they were very unfortunate to lose that game as well. If you remember, it was the Hugo Lloris fumbling the ball and kind of bobbled in just over the line off Toby Alderweireld. So it was very unfortunate for them to lose that game at Anfield. And so that's the question mark that I have. I do expect Liverpool to kind of try and dominate, certainly territory, not really possession themselves, but I think try and go forward on. And the question mark, another one for me, is whether Spurs go for Harry Kane or Lucas Moura, who's got greater pace. I'm touching wood while I say it, but I kind of hope that Harry Kane is brought back in, because I think actually he'll be a little bit easier for us to handle that kind of lack of pace and will enable us to kind of step forward a bit more.
Yeah, I think if I was Pochettino tonight, I would not start Harry Kane. I would take the same team that played the quarterfinals and the semifinals, because that's the team already knows how to win tough games. And Harry Kane, as we know, is just coming back from an injury. So if he's 100% fit or 80% fit, no one knows. Are they just rushing him?
Massive call, though. It's Harry Kane.
I know.
He's the poster boy for Spurs.
He could make a difference, even if he comes on in the second half. But they have a team who beat Manchester City and Ajax, who were on top of their game. So I think they should initially stick with Lucas Moura and Son up front, and then bring on Harry Kane.
And I think that's where Poch is obviously very clever. He's able to remove the emotion out of it, and he's going to make a decision there based on what is best for the team and the tactics on the day. Intuition says that having Moura and Son up front would cause more problems for Liverpool, I think, because of their pace. As you say, they'll get in behind the team, whereas Harry Kane is more of a focal point, and I think Van Dijk and Matip, who play at the back, will relish that further. I think the other consideration they've got to think about is if Kane is fit, how fit is he? And if he's the kind of player if he's fit to last 60 minutes, is it best to have him on at the start playing the 60 minutes and bring him off? Or with knowing that the penalties could be an outcome, and he is a first-class penalty taker, undoubtedly a first-class penalty taker, is it better to bring him on knowing that he's there for penalties? But as always, it depends how the game's going.
Interesting as well to think about maybe what they do with the forward line as well with Spurs. You know, do they go with a kind of three up front and leave Son on the left wing and maybe move Moura out to the right and go for quite an attacking team, and maybe Moussa Sissoko being the holding player over Wanyama and kind of having Eriksen and Dele Alli as part of that three, but more thinking about Son and Moura maybe trying to pen in and just leave a question mark in the minds of Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson. And this is where the kind of midfield three for Liverpool comes into play as well. And this is why I think that Wijnaldum will get the nod ahead of James Milner. He's got a bit more energy. He's a bit more kind of defensively solid. And I think you'll have Fabinho being the holding player with Henderson and Wijnaldum kind of box-to-box players in a sense, but with the kind of remit of tuck in for when Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson make those runs, which Liverpool fans want them to, up the pitch, kind of getting those crosses in. Obviously, we've seen all the assists they've made this year, but that's the kind of thing for me, and that's where I think the game could be won or lost, is those kind of wing areas.
I agree with that. I think that's how Tottenham... I think that'll be the outcome of the game. How can Tottenham manage the fullbacks, and can Tottenham stop them coming forward to any extent, and then from there, can they penetrate in? If they do come forward, can they penetrate in behind them? And that stems to how they set up as a team, how they set up in terms of the psychology of the game, how they approach it, and whether they pick Moura or Kane or so on.
There's one advantage that Liverpool hold over Spurs tonight is their bench strength as well. I think Origi started the semi-finals obviously because Firmino and Mo Salah were injured, but if required, Liverpool can bring him and even maybe Daniel Sturridge, you know, in terms of an attacking prowess. So I think that's where Liverpool have an advantage, slight advantage over Spurs. And if the game is probably 1-0, Spurs are leading the game, they could bring on Divock Origi and go for that equaliser or winning goal.
It's interesting, isn't it? Everyone seems to be wanting to have their pennies worth on the Champions League final. Two very popular teams from across the globe. In fact, WWE are at the O2 Arena tonight. So, beggars the choice, doesn't it? Little opportunity for an interviewer to get in there and ask some of the stars of WWE, do you think it's going to be Liverpool or Tottenham Hotspur?
I'll say, because of many reasons, Liverpool 2, Tottenham 0. Seamus, big Liverpool fan. Have to root for my best friend's team. Go Liverpool, 2-0.
I believe it's going to be a great game, and I believe this is Liverpool's final, and they're going to go 3-1. Yeah, 3-1.
As a supporter of Schalke 04, I cannot have Jurgen Klopp and his team winning, so I'm hoping for Tottenham, I'm sure.
What's my prediction? I'm sure we're going to offend somebody. We've got one of our camera guys is a big Tottenham fan, and Seamus is a Liverpool fan. But I don't care. I'm going to make my own mind up. So, both had insane comebacks. I think Liverpool's was more impressive, and the last goal was certainly more impressive. So, I'll give it to Seamus. I'll give it to Liverpool. They're winning.
As a lifelong Tottenham fan since the days of Gary Mabbott, Naeem, Paul Gascoigne, Gary Lineker, I really believe that Tottenham will beat Liverpool, and just like me, Tottenham will be the champions.
My only answer, I'm going for Liverpool. I think Liverpool have it in the bag. I think Liverpool are going to be champions. Let's go Liverpool. Liverpool.
I think that was the creme de la creme of WWE roadshow talent going out and about at the O2 Arena, pulling in as many of their so-called stars of European tours, maybe.
I think Triple H was busy, wasn't he?
didn't hear The Undertaker calling out anyway, either Liverpool or Spurs on that occasion. You mentioned there about sort of hidden strength and things like that. Yep. And you mentioned, Monty, about strength of the bench. I've just been doing my little straw poll, and you always see the celebrity fans come out the woodwork at this time of year, don't they? The glory hunters, you know, getting involved on social media and other ways. I think Liverpool have done them, though, when it comes to celebrity fans. Because Spurs-wise, I've got a list of five at the moment. Adele, J.K. Rowling, obviously Sir Alan Sugar, Jude Law and Rupert Grint, the ginger one from Harry Potter, which I think is probably outweighed by Angelina Jolie, Brad Pitt, Dr. Dre.
What?
Brad Pitt apparently is a Liverpool fan.
I don't believe that for a second.
He's come out. He's on social media. He's getting behind his team. He's looking for a ticket.
Through and through.
Oh yeah. Daniel, I've seen him at so many games.
Daniel Craig, Clive Owen, Samuel L. Jackson. Where on earth is that?
Well, Samuel L. Jackson, because he filmed a movie that was set in Liverpool called The 51st State. And so, a big part of it revolved around his kind of co-main character, like main star, was a big Liverpool fan. And the premise of the story was this guy who was involved in kind of, so we say, underworld activities, was trying to get a ticket to the big match, Liverpool against Manchester United. And Samuel L. Jackson was part of that. He went to some games, so he's apparently a Liverpool fan. LeBron James, another one. You know, LeBron James owns a small percentage of percentage of Liverpool FC as well. So he's another one. There's many one. I think Caroline Wozniacki, the tennis star. I know she'd been knocked out of the French Open. She's got plenty of time to watch the game now itself anyway.
Damien Lewis, he's a...
Yeah, he's another Reds, yeah. I mean, Daniel Craig as well, actually, because he's from Merseyside
Neeson.
Itself.
You wouldn't mess with him, would you?
Yeah? He certainly wouldn't.
Keep him on the bench.
So we got Bond and we got, Taken.
Got them all. You can have it. You can have that. You got the celebrity stakes wrapped up, that's for sure.
I don't know if we quite beat Aston Villa, though, when you saw kind of Tom Hanks tweeting his support of their playoff victory last weekend.
And
then you saw Prince William kind of celebrating with, who was the old former Villa?
John Carew.
I love that. When would you ever think that you would see a British royal celebrating with a kind of old 1990s
lifelong friends.
Classic kind of, centre forward?
Anything to get into a box, eh? For the most wealthiest game in football, as they call it. Anyway, we'll continue our build-up ahead of kickoff. One thing that must be mentioned here is that one thing that does separate these two teams is Liverpool have been there, done that. Five times
we've been there. Yes, our ninth final in total as well. So we've got the experience, we've got the kind of belief that we are European royalty, so we are where we belong.
Could this be a special six?
And the sunset for today, the European Cup surely is won. For the second successive year. Alan Kennedy, the unlikely man again. Spectacular arena for what promises to be an epic battle. It's penalties. Liverpool are European champions! What joy!
Nobody can live with this.
Is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hop lunch combo.
Let's talk rugby if we can very quickly because, lest we forget, big game in the Gallagher Premiership, final game of the Gallagher Premiership 2018-2019 season. We'll have more build-up ahead of that one. 6 o'clock start for kick-off for that one coming your way shortly. But underway at the moment is the Sevens. It's the final weekend of Sevens action. The World Series of Sevens comes to a conclusion in the French capital of Paris, and if the USA men's sevens teams earns 3 more points than Fiji in Paris this weekend, they will be crowned world champions. The notion that America would dominate world rugby union if it were only tried has become a tired cliche for many, but world champion team from America, ahead of the Olympic champions, is something that is very much on the cards. Fiji have won 4 tournaments on the HSBC World 7 Series this season, so the USA's won. But the Americans have reached the semi-finals at every single event. In Vegas, which the USA won, and in Dubai, which New Zealand won. Fiji didn't do that. It can therefore happen. Tournament's winners get 22 points. Runners-up get 19, and so on, down a scale to the 15th and 16th teams who get a single point each. It all comes down to one final weekend of action.
Carlin Isles, top try scorer. Carlin Isles gets it done for the USA. Nathan Hidayama, Canada's all-time leading point scorer. He's one of the best kickers in the business as well. Bernard Cock. Off the leash. Who's ties in? Come on, the little hit man. An absolute masterclass. South Africa
gold medal winners in Paris.
South Africans dominated last year. It's the Fijians and the States who are in the box seat going into the final weekend of action this year. First round or first session of pool matches has come to a conclusion at the hashtag Paris Sevens. Let me bring you up to date with those results. Samoa beating Canada in the first game, 22 points to 91. USA started up in style, beating Spain by 31 points to 7, as did South Africa, 22 to 7 winners over Wales. Australia against Kenya finished 19 apiece. Ireland, who were brilliant in London last weekend, they went down to Argentina in their opening game, 7 points to 22. England, who have been disastrous this year and have continued on that poor form. Yep, okay, they've had a few injuries. Yep, they're going through a regroup. Yep, I understand that Olympics are the big goal at the moment, but they lost 52-14 to Fiji in their opener today. Admittedly, Fiji being strong, but England have been poor. New Zealand almost got turned over by Scotland, who've been brilliant in recent months. They were beaten. They were eventual winners, 14-12, New Zealand over Scotland. And France running out as the big losers in the first round. They lost to the bottom-ranked team, Japan, 14 points to 17. Second round of games underway. This one being played over 2 days. So we'll watch on with interest. But it'd be great, I reckon. You know, we all chat rugby sevens, don't we? Year on year. We start at the beginning of the year at the Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens. It's good to see the States competing at the highest level. It can only be good for the game.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's what rugby's been crying out for, to branch out and to have that involvement from a market like the US. It could only encourage them to perhaps look at the 15s game as well and to start investing more heavily in that. I know that, you know, NFL and American football is the sport of choice. It's America's game, isn't it? But rugby certainly has got a place, and it's growing in interest for the sevens. And, you know, if they were to win a world title, that would be a massive step to actually raise the profile of the sport in the US. It would get a lot more media coverage, and it would be good for the game of sevens as well.
Yeah. It's going to be a tough ask for them, isn't it? Because Fiji have come into good form of late. They've won two of the last three tournaments. Probably should have won in Singapore, but had a little bit of a meltdown there as well. They're chasing the first world title in 3 years. But the USA, they've got good news, because arguably their best player, Perry Baker, he's missed most of this season. We did return in London as well, so they've been boosted by that. Yeah. So they've got nothing to lose here. And I couldn't agree more with what Robbie's saying there is, you know, it'd be wonderful to see them. It's already wonderful seeing them have the success they've had. But seeing them win a world title would just, I think, take the sport, especially sevens, to another level.
And I think you're right with that level. I think the big factor with it is the Olympics. You've got the Olympic medal on offer there, and you know the Americans aren't shy about putting their investment into their Olympic sports to make sure that they are successful. So that big dangly gold medal for rugby 17 Olympics is a huge factor, and which you might see USA taking really, really seriously.
I love to see the export of the game of rugby, and kudos again to Super Rugby. Early on today I was watching with my boy Chiefs against Crusaders, which is obviously one of the pool games in Super Rugby this year. But they played it over in Suva. They played it in the Fijian capital. So two Kiwi franchises going over to Fiji, which has been such a great feeder for world rugby. Forget just Australian and New Zealand rugby, world rugby in recent years, and to play sort of world-class rugby down there in Suva to a massive crowd, and they get entertained as well, can only be good for the game.
Absolutely. I mean, I bet they loved it. I can't imagine what the fans of those clubs would have thought of it themselves, maybe given the long trek to Fiji. But for rugby itself, take the game there, like you say, so many stars have come from the small nation down in the southern hemisphere, so it only can be good for them, and the excitement that it builds around that area. But I think just rugby sevens has been tremendous for it as well. I mean, it really is one of my favourite events of the year here in the UAE, the Emirates Airlines by Rugby Sevens, because the atmosphere that it generates there, and it really helps to build interest in the sport from those who maybe haven't been that interested in it in the past, because of the excitement it is, you know, the kind of the format of it, you know, the kind of the pace it's played at, the scoring that we see, the kind of tries that we see. It's been wonderful.
Well, if you enjoy rugby, you're in for a treat around about 31 minutes from now. We've just been having a debate off the table whether Alex Goode will start this Gallagher Premiership final. It's the two best teams in England going head-to-head. Makes a bit of a mockery of the playoff places. Do we need a playoff decision at the end of a Gallagher Premiership? That's another one for another day, maybe. Eric Axter against Saracens, the two teams that make their way through to the final, and it promises to be a cracker.
O'Flaherty straightens straight through the hole. A lightning break from O'Flaherty. He's gone round bigger.
Can he get all the way? Lazowski, Williams, Farrell, and Tompkins will have a second. Slade, and he'll chase this, and so will Noel, and this looks dangerous. Noel with Slade opening up. Noel does the job on his own. And now Lazowski over the top, and Vodopola, he's carried the ball all night.
We had the semi-finals last weekend. We've got the final this weekend. It's a repeat of last year's final. Sarries taking on Exeter Chiefs. And after the European Cup celebrations, Rob Wadsworth, was that a couple of weeks ago? It was about 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? Which were well documented on social media with the Sarries boys. It'd be a miracle to see them back on the field.
I think they're probably still partying, are they? Yeah, it was wonderful to see. And obviously, Alex Goode, all the pictures were there on Instagram as they made their way back down through the country. And it was like the world's biggest pub crawl, I think, wasn't it?
It was a crawl the whole way down the country, as you said, from Newcastle the way down.
There is something to be said for it. I mean, Saracens, we all know about the Wolf Pack. We all know that they have this culture and this setup that they really embrace that, and they take their off-field development, if you like, really importantly. So you've seen them, they go out to Oktoberfest, they'll go to Coachella, and they want to create memories for their players and their squad that really joins them together and means that they trust each other and they'll deliver on the pitch, and it clearly works, and there's a lot to be said for it.
I think people might have to be reminding Alex Goode of a few of those memories though along the way. Anyway, you can take nothing away from them. Robbie Greenfield will be watching on with interest on this one. I mean, Sarries got a start favourite, surely, haven't they?
Well, I mean, looking at them on paper, the Sarries have got, you know, some of the kind of fulcrum players of the England team that you'd have to include in that setup. Maro Itoje, Billy Vunipola, of course. You know, you've got Owen Farrell, who really is the star performer in an England shirt. And they've just got a pretty strong lineup, haven't they, Tom? I mean, you would know more about this than me, but looking at the head-to-head record, I know that they've shared one win apiece. And actually, I think that the win that Exeter Chiefs got was against a full-strength Sarries side back in December of last year. A little earlier in May, I think the Saracens won, yeah. But it was against it was two sides that were resting a lot of key players. So it's going to be an interesting one. I'm sure Exeter will go for the war of attrition approach and try and just ruck and maul them to death and kick the ball to the corners and just play for territory. And the Saracens will try and play their game, but. I mean, I would have thought the Saracens are the heavy favourites. I mean, I don't know how you would see it.
It's got to be, the Sarries have to be, given their European form this year. And yeah, they had a bit of a dip. Actually, these two teams had a bit of a dip. You're quite right. The two teams that feed the most players into the international setup come the Six Nations and other tournaments as well. For them to then be able to be a bolster at the end of the season, go through to European glory, come off the back of that, and then, of course, cement their place in the final for the Gallagher Premiership, I think they go in as favourites, but against a very, very difficult opposition, because Exeter have been brilliant in recent seasons. And both of these two teams, you know, we've talked a lot about Manchester City and the success they've had in recent years through investment. These two are great examples of where money can buy you success in rugby.
We mentioned like Man City there, so kind of going to football, and one club that kind of springs to mind is something that Robbie mentioned earlier on, talking about the Champions League final later on, and talking about Real Madrid and the way when they've been in final in recent years, they just kind of expect to win. And I think that's maybe the difference here. You know, this is Exeter's fourth consecutive appearance in this game, and yet they've only won one of those four previous finals. Sorry, their fifth consecutive appearance. Whereas you look at the Saracens, and you know they're chasing a fifth title. You know, they've won three of the previous four as well, so they've got that winning mentality. You mentioned that Champions Cup final win over Leinster 2 weeks ago. So I think they've just got the confidence there. Even though the teams are fairly matched on paper, they've just got that belief that they kind of, that almost arrogance that they expect to win.
I like Exeter. I'd like to see Exeter upset the apple cart. Would it be an upset? No, it really wouldn't. I mean, given the fact that they've, you know, they've won the Gallagher Premiership in recent years, and they've been there, done that. They know what big events like this mean. They've got a tough opponent. I just love the culture they've built down there at Exeter Rugby at the moment. The Chiefs, the drums. When the drums come out at the beginning, everyone gets dressed up as Native Americans, and they do their bit as well. It's just, it's a nice culture. It comes from. It comes from honest investment from a local lad who loved his club. And, you know, Exeter weren't there or thereabouts when I was growing up as a kid 15, 20 years ago. They weren't in the premier realms of rugby. Look where they've come in a short amount of time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're the new kids on the block. And as you say, they're a great team to watch as well. It's going to be a good game. I mean, in terms of a prediction, Tom, are you going to stick your neck out? I'm going to force you to make one.
I'm going to go for Exeter. I feel, after all this build-up and after all this hyperbole that I've been putting out there, I see a bit of a Spurs upset, if that were an upset, and I see a bit of an Exeter upset, if that were an upset, on the form book. Why? Thanks for the form of a couple of key players. Jack Nell is one of the go-to players for the Exeter Chiefs. He knows what it is to win big.
Drums are a big one, aren't they?
You can hear the chop roaring away, that you see all the headdresses, the flags going everywhere. The noise just hits you.
I'm from the southwest, I'm from Cornwall. The end was obviously from Devon. So you've kind of been here the whole time, and obviously rugby's a massive part of these areas. And as we've got bigger teams, you know, you felt the area get big as well.
The crowd around you grew and grew and grew.
A lot of it was about us having fun. I think you can get caught up on desperately trying to stay up in the Premiership. We've got to realise it's obviously a massive achievement what we have done. You know, not a lot of teams get to be in a Premiership final, let alone win one. I don't know how many buses we had that get left from here. We've got queues that gone down to the end of the car park down there, just people trying to get a ticket.
A sea of Chiefs fans going completely ballistic, and you're picking up your bag, trying to stay focused, trying to walk in. To see now, and something that we can talk about for years and years, exactly what we want.
Stino, get the ball, kick it.
Kick it.
Get it over, get it through the post straight away.
Kick it.
Steenson down the middle, and it looks like we need more time.
It comes down to those last little bit of moments, and they're the ones that count, and they're the ones that can almost make your season.
Penalty to Chiefs. And the rugby story brought a smile to every neutral's face in the land has its happy ending. From little Chiefs to big Chiefs to champions.
Little Chiefs to big Chiefs to champion Chiefs, and can they go on and do it a second time round? Fascinating game. That one kicks off at 6 o'clock. It's been shown down here at Barasti. If you are a rugby fan, come yourself down here. Watch your rugby as part of the build-up to the Champions League final. Cricket's ongoing at the moment as well, lest we forget. Let's get a quick update from the scores. Monty's watching on patiently.
Yep, New Zealand are almost home. Martin Guptill and Munro have made a 100-100 partnership, and it's all about the net run rate that they're looking forward to. And Afghanistan are struggling at the moment against Australia. They just lost their third wicket. Afghanistan are 56 for 3 after 14 overs.
Some great talking points from the world of cricket already. England open up proceedings on Thursday against South Africa. I thought they were a little short. I thought South Africa were going to chase these runs down. But thanks in no small part to a great all-round performance from a certain Ben Stokes. Yep, he scored runs. Yep, he took a couple of consolation wickets late on. But what about this as well as a talker?
Again on the sweep. Is it going to go over his head? Oh, no way. No way. You cannot do that, Ben Stokes. That is remarkable. That is one of the greatest catches of all time. You cannot do that.
That's unbelievable stuff. You've got to see it properly to believe it. It's happened too quick for every one of you. Sure, you'll have a look at it in slow motion. A slog sweep, flat, and that was travelling. And have a look at that. The best you've seen for a long, long time.
Let's watch it full speed. Look at them behind. Even Stokes amazed himself there.
Even Stokes amazed himself. England victorious against South Africa. First up, impressed by England, Monty?
Very impressed by England. All-round performance. The batsmen stood up. We had 450. I think England had 450s in that innings. The bowlers, Jofra Archer, we were talking about him, how he would be the X factor for England. He came up good for England in his first ever competitive game for the country. And Ben Stokes, he had a poor IPL, and going into the World Cup was concerning about his form, but he's come at the right time for England, and batting, bowling and fielding. Wow, what a great catch.
It's weird, isn't it, Robbie Greenfield, that we were having this sort of conversation. Ben Stokes went off the boil. We didn't really sort of realise it, but then, you know, there was a point going into this Cricket World Cup where, Robbie, people were asking, what is Ben Stokes' role at the moment? You know, he's not bowling a huge amount, and when he is, he's not bowling at full tilt. He's not scoring the runs he should be scoring. He seems to have sorted out that role, though. I don't know whether his time at the IPL seems to have worked it out or not.
Yeah, I just to a degree playing himself back into form, and he is probably... He's probably England's best player, all told, is he not, in the one-day format? In terms of someone that you would pick first name on the team sheet when he's playing well, and he can be devastating from both angles. He can be devastating with the bat, he can be devastating with the ball, and I'm looking actually at replays of that catch. You just reminded me what a ridiculous catch that was. I mean, he was unsighted, he couldn't see the ball, he was bent over at a ridiculous angle, the ball was travelling at pace, and he's arched his entire body. He's actually in the air when he makes the catch. It's an extraordinary piece
of
athleticism,
isn't he? He's got his hand the wrong way around.
Yeah. It's like 45-degree angle that he's at, isn't it?
And yeah. You just can't teach it. I mean, it's phenomenal. And I think if England are to win the tournament, they're going to need him to be at his absolute very best this tournament, Ben Stokes, because he is that big game player. He's that huge personality, and he can really put his stamp on the game. And I think we've been looking at the likes of Joss Butler and doing what he's been doing, and Matt's, perhaps that's taken a lot of the attention away from Ben Stokes. But yeah, it was a timely return to form for England. And you're absolutely right. I wasn't all that impressed with a total of 311, given all the talk in the build-up, given all the scores that were being notched in the warm-up games. But their bowling did the job. Jofra Archer, what a talent he is. I mean, he has got to be certainly a consideration for the test format, given the fact that he was absolutely devastating. And he's what England have needed and what they've craved for an awful long time.
Absolutely. I mean, you talk about that kind of the attention being taken away from Ben Stokes. I think Jofra Archer has done that to most of the team, because obviously there's all question marks in the weeks, the months leading up to it, whether he would get into the squad and who he would replace. Well, a good start for him. Figures are 3 for 27, and just kind of watching him for a number of overs where he was consistently bowling 90 miles per hour plus, and that, like you say, Robbie,
and England haven't had
England
that pace.
Needs.
You know,
exactly.
whenever they go to the down under to play the Ashes, we all talk about their lack of pace versus the Mitchell Starks and the Pat Cummins, and they never get the ball above 90 miles an hour. They've suddenly got someone who's got searing pace, and that is what, I mean, for all the great seamers that they've had in the last 10-15 years, the Jimmy Andersons, the Stuart Broads, they haven't had that blistering pace man, and I think that's what Jofra Archer's offering.
I think there's a lot to be excited about, but I think we need to temper it a little bit with the fact that it's just the first game.
Oh yeah.
And I think that we are seeing a lot of teams throw the hat into the ring already. New Zealand performance today, very clinical, very good. Looks like they're going to do it without losing a wicket as well. The West Indies yesterday, I mean, that was against a Pakistan team who put a number of teams to the sword in recent times. Pakistan came into this tournament with a lot of high hopes in that Pakistan thing, and they were made to look like boys against the West Indies, who just seemed to say, and again, I'll temper what I'm saying here, just seemed to have that sort of Caribbean swagger back again. They got some quick boys, they're hitting batsmen helmets, they're causing a bit of ruckus. Chris Gayle's back there with the swagger as well, and yet he's got the young pretenders to the throne backing him up as well. I was very impressed by them.
Yep. I think the Caribbean Premier League, the IPL, has helped the West Indies a lot. They've got really good bowling lineup. Yesterday we saw pace attack. They didn't use even a single spinner. So I think they're going to use the same strategy against a lot of subcontinent teams such as Sri Lanka, Pakistan. Pakistan is already out, so from the West Indies games. So India might have to face the same bowling attack. And this is where West Indies could gain a lot of points, beat the Asian teams. And they could easily surprise one of the other nations such as South Africa or New Zealand and get into the semi-finals, in my opinion. Yeah.
Just a question, I suppose, Monty. Do you think with the format changes, and obviously we've got a new format now for the World Cup, how much time is there for a team to grow into the tournament? Or do they need to be ready and going at the winning games at the start? Yeah. Or can they afford to lose a couple and still be able to progress, do you think?
I would say it's a very good question. I would say not much. From game one, the team has to be playing their best game. If they lose one game, like we saw how Pakistan lost yesterday, 105 all out. Now to recover from that, they would have to win comprehensively the other games, because the net run rate would play a very important factor after match 5, 6 or 7 in the business end of the tournament. So for example, Sri Lanka losing today as well, I mean, it's going to take them another 3 or 4 games to recover. So I think they have to go from game one and try and win almost all their games, almost as good as the IPL format.
I mean, just to add to that is, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the reduction of the teams in this tournament, and the ICC has come in for a lot of criticism, saying what message is that sending to the affiliate nations and the younger nations who are looking to make their mark. But what it does do is make every single game crucial. So you've got to be on your best game from the start. So you don't really have those sort of those B-line draws, or those B-grade draws, if you like, throughout the tournament. You can build yourself into it. You've got to be on your top game from the beginning with just five teams in the two groups to compete. So a lot to look forward to over the next 6 weeks. And my wife and daughters are very, very unhappy about the fact that they're not going to see the remote control, basically, between now and the end of July. So say goodbye to that one. Let's take a short break just so we can compose ourselves, get ready for the biggies as well. Gala Premiership final off at 6 o'clock. And, of course, the Champions League straight after that. 11 o'clock this evening. It's live down here at Brasti. Do come down and watch it. It features two teams who are very much deserving of making their way through to the final. Spurs did it this way.
To overcome setbacks.
Eriksen!
To believe.
Harry Kane into the area! Spurs have scored! And their Champions League season stays alive.
To flourish on the biggest stage.
Vertonghen to the back post. And here he is! Jan Vertonghen with a goal! Super Jan gets it!
To dare.
Hugo Lloris has saved penalties recently. And he's done it again!
To do.
What a night for Tottenham Hotspur!
To hear roaring masses in the new home.
Watson looking for the angle, clips it into Son. That's brilliant. Son is still going. It is a magic moment from Heung-Min Son.
The triumph in heavyweight clashes.
This is well played. Son, he's done it again. Manchester City have been stunned in the Champions League.
To fight and to the end.
Dele Alli, they're slipping. They're sliding. It's in. Lucas Moura with the hat-trick goal. Going to the Champions League final!
To believe, to fight,
to triumph,
to dare and to do. To dare is to do.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hop lunch combo.
Right, we're into the final segment of the show, and therefore enough time for us to just get around the grounds and find out what's happening. A result for you from the Cricket World Cup. Monty, who's won?
Yep, New Zealand have comprehensively beaten Sri Lanka by 10 wickets. Great job, clinical performance by the team, and great for the run rate. So another subcontinent team struggling today.
Meanwhile, Afghanistan also struggling at the moment. They're up against Australia. I think Australia will go deep in this tournament. They just love rubbing our noses in it, don't they? Especially in England as well. How are they going on in their first game?
Yeah, Afghanistan are currently 3 wickets down for 69 runs after 17 overs. They are patching up a partnership after losing 2 early wickets. Even a score of 200 for Afghanistan would be an achievement in itself today.
Yeah. Let's get over to Roland Garros as well, where Novak Djokovic, the current world number one, is in action.
He certainly is, and he's 2 sets to live up against the Italian Salvatore Caruso, taking the opening set 6-3 and the second 6-3 as well. He's currently 3-2 up on serve in this third set so far. I can also tell you as well that Fabio Fognini has gotten past Roberto Bautista Agut by 3 sets to 1, 7-6, 6-4, 4-6, 6-1. So it's looking good for Novak Djokovic, like you say, the world number one. The ladies' world number one is struggling, though, and it looks like she could be going out any moment. She is a set and 5-2 down against Katerina Siniakova, who is serving for the match at the moment. Japanese star Osaka really struggling as well, but we've seen her come from behind already at Roland Garros, but it's going to take a comeback of epic Spurs, maybe even Liverpool style levels there. She's going to get through to the last 16 of the French Open. Like I say, Katerina Siniakova currently serving for the match 5-2 up in the second set after taking the opening set by 6-4.
Thanks so much indeed for all your text messages coming in. Somebody texting in, forget Frank Lampard, what about Gianfranco Zola? Surely a better man to take over at Stamford Bridge.
Well, he's already there, isn't he? And but I think he's had a bit of a checkered manager career, has he? Was it Birmingham?
Watford,
well. So I don't think he's maybe quite got the pedigree that the Chelsea would require. He probably spent some money for them, Matt.
One man we wanted to quiz a little earlier on, apologies, because he's off to a wedding, is our Harry. He sent us apologies, so was happy, hoping to be with us, but couldn't make it in the end. But One thing we did want to ask him about, because obviously Harry Redknapp has a long affiliation with Spurs, doesn't he, correct?
He does, yes.
It took them into the Champions League, I think, 2010?
Yes, he certainly did. Yeah, famous win over Inter Milan, I believe.
Yeah.
You'd think that
would have been the team that he could keep an eye out for later. And then this popped up from the Claire Balding show. Don't know if that's still going on. It was pretty awful anyway when it was running. But this popped up when he was a guest.
Now, when Sam Allardyce was here on the sofa, he told us that his dream had always been to manage Manchester United. Mm. What's your dream club?
If I'd have managed a club, I'd like to have managed Liverpool. I think it's a fantastic atmosphere. When that crowd before the game, when they sing and the atmosphere, never walk alone. I just think it's got an amazing, the ears stand up on the back of your neck. It's an incredible place and it's a great football club.
Could have thrown him under the bus on that one. Would it be accepted up there?
I don't know, really. I don't think he
might
have suited.
It's very far from the south coast, isn't it?
Anfield,
eh?
We've got the man we want in Jurgen Klopp anyway. But, he was an attacking kind of manager, wasn't he, Harry Redknapp? So that certainly would have fit with the ethos of Anfield. The one question I've actually got on when we're talking about Redknapps and who they're supporting tonight is Jamie Redknapp, obviously former Liverpool and Tottenham Hotspur player. Yeah. Had a little bit longer at White Hart Lane than he did at Anfield, but certainly he's kind of fondly remembered by the Reds.
So, the same thing, wouldn't
exactly,
it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a number down the
Crouchy
years. Oliver Leonardson as well.
Cole.
I think Redknapp's going to be pulling for Liverpool, is he? Surely.
Jamie?
Surely.
Yeah, hope so.
But his dad would probably be pulling for Spurs, wouldn't he?
You'd imagine.
Although there was a bit of bad blood, wasn't there, at the end of his Spurs reign? He was sort of pushed out the door, wasn't he?
That is a good question. He was angling for the England job, wasn't he? And then there was that little run-in he had with the authorities that we won't go into.
Okay, yeah, exactly. It was his dog's fault, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's all water under the bridge. And he's a huge fan of Mauricio Pochettino, is Harry. Whenever we've spoken to him on the show, he has he's been waxing lyrical about the job that Pochettino has done at I almost said White Hart Lane there. It is. It's White Hart Lane.
Well, it's the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, because they're probably waiting for a sponsor to come along.
Spurs,
but it's right next
in
to the White Hart Lane anyway.
The Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which of course is their new home. So, I'm sure Harry will be pulling for his old team, and he's got an awful lot of affection for that club. And I just hope he's enjoying that wedding of his.
Exactly.
It's not his wedding, I don't think.
Where's our invite, Harry? But the other thing that begs the question is, let's get past this game first and foremost, and let's not try and throw too many other talkers into the mix. But could this potentially be Pochettino's last game for Spurs?
Well, he said it himself, didn't he? He said maybe if he wins the Champions League, he might leave Spurs. I don't see that happening. I see if they do win tonight, it's a wonderful kind of bargaining chip for him to go to Daniel Levy to say, listen, give me funds. I've won you the Champions League. This is a young team with a lot of potential. We finally moved into our brilliant new stadium. And, let's take this club forward. But to do so, we need investment. And I think it's a great way for him to say, give me an investment or I will leave. There's like the likes of, Juventus are looking for a new manager. They've been heavily linked with him there. So it's going to be interesting times for him, win or lose anyway. But the fact that he's taken them as far as he has done to the Champions League final is a wonderful success in himself. If they bring all big ears back to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, then, how can Levy not give him the funds and not do everything in his power to keep him?
We're out.
Or
he
might
time.
Just turn around and go, well, you've won the Champions League without spending a penny. Same again, please, next year. You don't need to sign players.
Transfer what? Roll them out. Dust them off and roll them out again. Listen, thanks, boys. You put in a good stint. Thank you very much indeed for all your hard yards over the last 3 hours. Thanks for all your hard yards over the course of the last 6 months as well. Hopefully we'll be back down here at Barasti after the summer months. Stay tuned to Dubai I-103.8 for news of a brand new venue coming up for the Grill over the course of the Cricket World Cup and all the way up until September. Good, exciting times all round there. Started off with predictions at the beginning of the show. Rob, have you had your mind swayed at all in any way?
No, I'm sticking, despite Danny Norton's better efforts, I'm going to stick with Liverpool 3-1 win.
3-1 win for you. Robbie Greenfield, any changes?
I've totally changed my mind. Spurs to win 5-0.
Good lad, yeah. I'm with you as well. See a Spurs upset on the cards here. Spurs Afghanistan double. Monty?
I see Liverpool winning 2-1 tonight, yeah.
Danny, come on.
I can't say it. just in case it all revolves around what I say now, and what I wear tonight, you never know. It could all revolve around me.
We look in
it doesn't, but there we go.
I'm sure I speak on behalf of all the other grill panelists. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
It's going to be a nervous time for you this evening. Thanks very much to the bench, to Hector and all the team down here on the ground. Thanks to Elaine back in the studio. Thanks to all of the team down here at Barasti. Hopefully we'll be locking swords with them again very, very soon. Should we play out with Tomo? I think there's only one way to play out with a bit of a Liverpool legend, shall
we? Yeah, Scouser, who lifted the European Cup as well, giving his thoughts on Roberto Firmino and the final in general.
We thank you all. Enjoy the Champions League final. Get yourself down here to Barasti. Fellas, thank you very much indeed. Enjoy it wherever you're watching it. Come on down to Barasti. Watch it on the beach. Watch it in the... I don't know what I'm going to call that area yet. The sort of... The air conditioned...
The dome.
The dome.
Call it the dome.
It's the dome. It's the pleasure dome. It's the Champions League pleasure dome. That's where it is. Get yourself in there and enjoy. We're going to be back next week from 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Until then, enjoy the Champions League. Bye-bye.
Yeah, if you've got strains and things like that, Vinny, you need sometimes 10 days, maybe 3 weeks. And it's been 3 weeks. So I would think if Firmino was fit, which by all accounts he is, yes, he'll be ready to play. And I think he should do, because he is such a big part of it. He is my favourite player here at Liverpool. You can talk about Van Dijk, which people would expect because I was a centre-back. But it's Bobby Firmino, I think, makes things happen. He makes things happen for Mo Salah and Sadio Mane. He's the one who makes them, because they come alive when he gets the ball. I would think, don't forget, we were here 12 months ago. And it was a fantastic experience. That was, but we got beat. Real Madrid were favourites. We come as favourites this time. So it's to embrace it. There's a confidence. And being here before, will it help? But the players are, you've seen it with them. There's been 3 weeks break, not just for Liverpool, but for Spurs. 3 weeks is a long time trying to keep them in fitness. I applaud Jürgen Klopp taking them down to Spain, to Marbella, to make sure you're keeping them, particularly to acclimatise. So it's wonderful. Spurs have been out here a couple of days earlier than Liverpool. You know, will that help them? Maybe, because they haven't played in it, is to get away from all the hustle and bustle. Liverpool had that last year. But from what I've seen on them, they look confident. They look ready. They finished the season confidently. And I think hopefully they bring that to the party tomorrow night.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.